Now, we are going to finish off that 9:7 that says that the government, of his government and of his peace, there shall be no limits. The Hebrew word there might mean frontiers. To order it and establish it upon the throne of David from this time forth and even forever. Now comes the prophet and says that Christ is going to be the essence of government of the world. And he repeats that three different times, because even the phrase Prince of Peace, I think I explained to you before, means ruler of peace. The same word is used for that as is used, I mean, derived from the word used in the first part that says government. The government shall be upon his shoulders. The essence of that word is the Hebrew word tsar, and that means ruler or prince. So the ruler of peace is Christ. Now, it's obvious that if Christ were really ruling over this world, we ought to have peace in it. But people look around and there is no peace, so then they think the whole thing is a myth, perhaps. The third statement says, of his government and of his peace there shall be no end. So his government has no frontiers, no limits, no boundaries. That's the Hebrew word there, means boundaries. The government has no boundaries of the government of Christ. Now, do you think his rulership in the world today has boundaries? Well, in certain terms of this world, yes. Yes. You think he ought to go in and clean out the nest of bureaucrats? He's not going to do it. Of course, that's what the Jews were looking for in their Messiah. Somebody would come and deliver them from Rome. But remember, the Christians in Rome and in the rest of the world never tried to change the government. All of this said for a real purpose. The purpose is to say these things. If the government is upon the shoulders of Christ, then what does he rule over? Who does he control? And Jesus said to Pilate, if my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight. A good verse for the pacifists, who believe you should never raise a weapon against anybody. And Jesus said, I would fight if my kingdom were of this world. He didn't rule out that necessity. Sometimes you have to defend, as of course the children of Israel all had to fight. David fought and so forth. And yet David became the symbol of Jesus' governance, or Christ's governance, as we should rather say. And in fact, in Isaiah 9:7, it says, his kingdom shall be established as the kingdom of David. Now, how is it that Christ can be established as the extension of the kingdom of David? That's a very gutty question. The point is that Christ rules now over the spiritual kingdom, and that is the kingdom of the essence of the universe, the kingdom of energy, the kingdom of the spirit. So he rules in the realm of the spirit today. Everyone who is not under the spirit or possessing the spirit of Christ is subject to disintegration. They're gone. Since Christ has the rulership of the spirit kingdom, the rest of the world is doomed. Those who do not have the spirit of Christ, is just a matter of time. Anyway, Satan's world is dead. They just haven't fallen down yet. They have been divested of their spirit. It's like they're zombies. They're mechanical people. And when the realm of the spirit is finally in its own, well, they'll be gone. And of course, I've got some scriptures here that we can share, but the Revelation 20 shows us the kind of absolute power that Christ has over Satan. Because he cast them into the bottomless pit. At that time, it was for 1,000 years, presumably. Don't ever argue with anybody over whether the millennium is symbolic or literal, because you don't know. But it could be literal. Could be symbolic. Remember the scripture that says, one day with the Lord is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is a day. Now, well, let's just for the sake of the argument accept the idea of a literal 1,000 years, and Satan is bound. The rulership at that time of the earth is in the hands of Christ. And he will rule with a rod of iron. He's now not the shepherd with a gentle staff. He's the shepherd king with a rod of iron, and it isn't that when Satan is in the bottomless pit, everybody will be nice to each other. It is that he'll crack the whip if they aren't. He's got the power to hold them in line. According to Revelation 20, after 1,000 years is up, he's loosed from the pit and theoretically gathers together the forces of evil on the earth that has to be the descendants. And if Satan's out for 1,000 years, who is left there? And he'll gather the cronies again whom he can gather, a fairly large company, and they will go up against Israel. By that time, Israel is an unwalled city. Can you imagine that Israel in a few short years is going to get rid of all their defenses? No. When this whole thing takes place, might be another 100 years or 200, 300, I don't know. But the ultimate point is that when Satan is bound, there will be no more wars on the earth for that 1,000 years, because Christ will rule with a rod of iron. If people keep wanting a one-world government, that's what it'll be, Christ. Not an evil government. But anyway, then when Satan is loosed, he gathered these people together, and you'll see the name if you look at the Revelation 20, Gog and Magog. Now go back to Ezekiel 38. And you'll find Gog and Magog are the mischief makers of Ezekiel 38. And it says they go up against an unwalled city. I mean, the beloved city, Jerusalem. It's got to be Jerusalem. But it is unwalled at that time. That is, without defenses. Theoretically, we'll be out of here by then. That might be good news to you. We're out of here. Before all that action in the Middle East takes place, the church is already in heaven. Comes in, and you see if Christ comes in a moment in the twinkling of an eye, you know, the whole scenario there does not admit of our looking over to the Middle East and saying, my gosh, there's a war, maybe Jesus will come. No, it's not going to do that at all. He's going to take us out of this whole thing. Then the whole Middle East will be a vast arena of conflict. And how long it'll take, I don't know.